Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Jazz Woodwinds player Brian Lantris. He talked about his new 2022 CD called Red List. It's his 11th album as a leader and second on Palmetto Records, and it's dedicated to the preservation of endangered species. Spreading awareness of this tragic global situation is part of the impetus for this album. We cover this and the modern COVID world we are all now emerging from, along with some more. Enjoy the story.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Joe DeMiro, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Good. Hey, thanks for taking a minute out. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
I love the new album, man. I leaped on that thing and got it on the show real fast.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I think, you know, there's several components that probably go into this, and I'm going to start at the top with what's been really in front of our faces for the last couple of years has been COVID. And I'm curious how this project was motivated by what we went through on this planet for those couple of years, and how maybe that motivated and shaped how this came out.
You know, really what happened was, I think for a lot of people, it made me thinking about things differently. And I was looking at the larger situation in our world, and what can I do to make this better instead of taking? And you know, I have a good friend who's an artist, a metal sculptor, and he always talks about how he wants to give back something instead of just taking, instead of just constantly taking from the earth. What can we do that's going to give back in some way? And since I've been animal lover my entire life, I wasn't necessarily thinking about a new album, but during that entire time, I started researching a lot more just about climate change and things that we can do as individuals to help stop that, or at least slow it down. And one of the things that came up was the amount of animals that have been going extinct from not only climate change, but of course animal interaction, and that entire subject matter was so fascinating to me that once I started getting into it, I started reading about all these specific animals that were going extinct, and I felt like I wanted to do something to help build awareness, try to do something that could maybe help them. And you know, that came out of, I think, just the idea of, like I said, when the pandemic hit, a lot of people really kind of started thinking about really, truly what's important in our lives. And to me, I'm very, very grateful that I get to play music and write it and perform with people and tour. And but fundamentally, I want to do something more significant as a human than simply playing music, if that makes sense. You know, I want to do something that was a deeper cause for me spiritually and just as a human. So it just seemed to be the right timing for me to have an awakening.
And I guess I got that from, you know, I get a lot of discs in the mail in my capacity as you know, with the radio station, and I could tell immediately by the artwork and just, you know, knowing your work and by the way that you presented it, there was an extra level of moxie that went behind this. My question to you is, you know, going into it from an artistic perspective, from cover to song, how did you approach this? How did you want this to ultimately come out the way it did?
I researched about each animal first. I found the most endangered species, and it actually started with eight. And it just kept expanding. I kept learning about these animals, and I ended up with 13 animals. And when I was researching their habitat, their the problems that they are facing, whether it's human encroachment into their environment, whether it's actual introduction of an unusual species to that region from humans. There's all these different factors. The more that I was researching about these animals, I really just got very into that. And what happened was I decided that I was going to make this album, and I reached out to friends, and I told them what I wanted to do and why. And they were all very behind the project at that point. They all just, they agreed and wanted to learn more, and we were learning together. And, you know, one of the people that I didn't know, I didn't know him personally, but I knew his music, was Jeffrey Keezer. And Jeff is a brilliant artist, and he's someone that when I was thinking about what kind of keyboardist I needed for this project, I needed someone that would be able to play piano extremely well, but also be a master of synthesizers and Rhodes and organ and all these things. And when I talked to him on the phone, I said what the project was about. He said, you know, that sounds fascinating to me. Can you please send me some music that you're writing, you know, that we're going to be playing? And I had to tell him the truth, which was, I haven't written a note yet. I want to line up the artist first, and then I'll write. And so that's what I did. And then, Jeff had heard my earlier work and he liked it and he understood the message. So he agreed without hearing anything and said, okay, well, send me what you can as soon as you can, of course. But after all the research that I did, I just sat down at the piano and I wrote all the music, and it came out in about 10 days. And there were several days where I wrote two songs. And so I think artistically it felt very, very honest and very pure. And I didn't really have the time to even consider any of the things that can maybe cloud one's judgment or maybe filter your thoughts. And I think for me, I just sat down and played, and I had lyrics for some of the tunes. I had, but the purpose was there. And when I sat down, the music just it was almost like me trying to catch it as fast as I heard it. So it came out, and I didn't filter it. I didn't change it. I felt like it was honest to the creatures. It was honest to the purpose, and therefore I just got behind it completely. And, you know, the compositional process for me has been, I try to not judge it at any time. And what I mean is that I don't feel like I write, or that I wrote any of this music. I feel like maybe I discovered it. It was already there. And I tapped into something where I heard it and then wrote it down. I transcribed it, but it's from another place. And so I don't ever feel ownership on my music. The music that people would say I wrote, I don't really feel like I wrote it. And in this album, that was even more so. I felt like it was just coming. I was lucky that I grabbed it in the air at that moment. And that was what was representative of the orangutan and the snow leopard and whatever the given animal was for that day, for that time. That the music just came out, and I didn't question it. And I think that's something I've been trying to do for a long time. But I feel like as an artist, the more honest I am, the better the art comes out. If I ever question it, then that's problematic, because that's filtering what's going on. And for me, if the purpose is correct, then the music will follow that as well.
You know, I just took a trip out to San Diego. It was a long trek from Kansas City out west, and I was telling my wife that I always wanted to see a California condor. And I remember they used to talk about how they would build these massive nests, and they're endangered, and it just blew my mind. Yeah. And I was just thinking, obviously, when you're behind the wheel, you start thinking about things. And I've always found that one of the ugliest parts of humanity is that you know, people in positions that can put pollutants and different things into the air can just be okay with things that existed billions and billions of years before is just never being around anymore. It's an unreal notion to me.
I'm with you 100%. It's hard to grasp that is the thought process that many people have, and I it's so unfamiliar, and I can't even imagine thinking that way. So it's hard to conceptualize, but it's absolutely true. And you know, there's different levels of that. There's the cat that actually signs the bill knowing that this may put the condor extinct, even though whatever. And usually, unfortunately, it's financially driven. And that's just a horrible, sad reality of our lives and a sad attribute of humans.
So another part of this album and what's going on with the world, to kind of make a slight departure here. You know, the jazz community was obviously affected. Clubs closed down. There was a lot of things. But, you know, a lot of musicians became better at promoting and doing production skills and things like that. So I'm curious, how did you change over this time and how you, as yourself with new skills and collectively as a community, how do you see this community rebounding and being stronger as a result?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think personally for me, what happened was it made me question why, you know, the big picture of what am I doing and what's the purpose. And it seemed like a moment, I don't want to say it seemed like, it was a very long moment of reflection as to what I want to do and what I want to pursue. And once again, honesty just came in again, where, you know, I choose some instruments that are not the most practical, in the sense of if I want to tour with a rock and roll band, if I want to play with a lot of different groups, they're not going to call me to play bass flute on one of their gigs. And it's, so there's that moment of, do I practice this instrument that I know will give me practical work, or do I follow what I feel is my spiritual path to grow? And for me, it just became more clear. And it was just, I'm going to do what I think, what feels best, and work as hard as I possibly can to make that work out in the world of finances, in the world of music and art as a whole. I've seen a lot of artists kind of go through the same thing, where people were either in it for the long haul and they're going to figure out their own path, or maybe this isn't the way to go and they're going to choose a different route in their lives. So I actually saw a lot of musicians leave New York, which was sad. And to see a lot of people that are now going into different careers altogether, it has been really hard. My favorite clubs in New York are gone, and there's still some great clubs, but you know, the Jazz Standard, for instance, was my favorite. I mean, I loved playing there with my band. I played there with a lot of different bands, and it's just gone. You know, there was Fat Cat. Another club where they had these great jam sessions. They had late night stuff going on all the time. They were very respectful towards musicians. It's gone. You know, there's a lot of places, things have changed. The landscape has changed, but, the people that have stuck around, and I have some friends that split and are back now. And I think it's made everyone realize priorities. And with this record, that was one of the beautiful attributes of it, where when I called up my friends like Ron Blake, who's the saxophonist, baritone saxophone on Saturday Night Live. He's played in, you know, he played in Roy Hargrove's band for many years. He's been in Christian McBride's band for many years. And Ron is one of my best friends. And when this project started getting going, when I called out to Ron and said, hey, you know, would you be interested in playing on this? And, you know, here's what I'm doing. Here's what's going on. It's an immediate, like, yes, of course I want to, that has purpose. It has something greater than, just playing over a tune. So I think the camaraderie, was really important in this album. And I think in the jazz world altogether, where a lot of people are unifying and joining forces to try to keep moving forward. And that's been refreshing. And it's also been tough in terms of the clubs and who's playing where. And, you know, some of the smaller clubs are now getting people like Branford Marsalis playing at them, which, you know, before he was playing at the, you know, the huge clubs. And now some of them that are still around aren't doing that as much. So it's a change, and everyone's still trying to find where the ground is. And I think that's just the nature of it. But gratefully and thankfully, a lot of things are coming back, and we're able to play a lot more. And the audiences seem eager to hear it, and that's wonderful.
You know, another part of what's going on, you know, from my perspective as a fan of jazz, is that, you know, I think the audiences are different. I think there's a different appreciation. What are you noticing from fans, and is it a refreshing change?
I had a concert a week ago where there was about 1,000 people, and it was an outdoor concert, and it was in Reno, which is my hometown. But I brought out my New York band, so I had Billy Hart and Lonnie Plaxico and Ryan Keberly and a bunch of other friends joining in from the West Coast. And what I noticed was the level of listening was pretty shocking to me. And what I mean is that, you know, we finished one song, and I went into a solo baritone saxophone, basically an interlude in between the songs. I would have each one of the artists in the band play an interlude and just by themselves. And when I took a breath, you could hear a pin drop. I mean, the place was just absolutely silent. We're talking a huge outdoor venue with a lot of people, and no one was saying anything. No, everyone was just listening. And that was a powerful moment for me, just to realize the level of listening that was happening at that moment. And I have to tell you that usually when I do something like that over the years, I can usually hear people talking. There, you know, most of the place is quiet, but there's people that are the outliers, or even if they're close up and they're, you know, whatever they're talking about. But that was really fascinating to me, that it's an outdoor venue. There's a ton of people, and it was just absolute silence. And so that, to me, just seemed like the audience was very into it, very engaged, and really, really paying attention to what was happening. And thankfully, I had some brilliant artists like Billy Hart he's just such a master that he deserves that kind of listening level. But the whole vibe was just different. It felt more significant.
Yeah, I'm noticing that from my end here in Kansas City, too. There's a different level of enthusiasm and interaction with the artists on stage. Where's the best place for folks to pick up Red List? And more than that, what can people do to help and to, you know, assist in the funds and saving these animals and doing the good work you're doing?
For the music, you can find the music at all the regular places where it's, you know, either Amazon, you know, Apple, iTunes. There's my website, brianlandrus.com. You can get the physical CDs and the downloads. But more to your point, how can people make a difference? I think I would say if this is an interesting topic for folks, then look up the IUCD Red List. Look up the creatures that are endangered, and look up, just type into Google the, you know, most endangered species, and you're going to be shocked that there's a lot of animals you've never heard of. Contributions we can do to help them would be going directly to them. I've been working with the wonderful organization, Save the Elephants, they're from the UK, but based in Kenya. And they are doing incredible work to save the African elephant. They're on the ground, and they're doing things to really, really protect them. There's organizations to save the Javan rhino, which is only 65 left in the world right now. It's just horrifying. Each one of them have an armed guard because poachers are coming in and killing them. And they're worth millions of dollars to these people for, supposed medicinal purposes, which is just bogus all the way around. So I would say, you know, contribute to those organizations and try to see what we can do. But really, on the easiest way to help animals in general is adopting vegetarian or vegan lifestyle. And I know I have friends that don't want to hear that, but it's simply the truth. It's the largest contributor of fossil fuel emissions in the world. It's that entire industry. So if people are interested in this, there's a lot of things you can do. It just by not eating meat, by not partaking in that industry. So the amount of land that is taken up for grazing for the animals is really shocking and sad, and that's putting a lot of these animals out of our world forever. So there's a lot of stuff that we can all do, and some of it is easier than others. And I have to say, when I used to tour as a vegetarian, it was really hard. And this is going back 15, 20 years, but nowadays it's pretty easy. You know, I don't have a problem finding food. I'm vegan now, I never have a problem in finding food that's actually really delicious. So I would say that's the easiest, most practical thing for most people.
Great to catch up with you. Thank you for the music. Good luck with everything. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your time, Joe. I really appreciate that.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in New York City, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Brian for his time, energy, and cool. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.